the discussion. So could I please ask, Matty, could you come and take a seat at the podium? And whilst Ricardo is just getting his papers together, could we please make a presentation to our patient, Mrs. Dorothy Clark, MBE, headmistress, model, mother and grandmother. Thank you very much indeed, Dorothy. Just to bring a bit of colour into the room. So we've got you some spring flowers, Dorothy. I hope you enjoy them.
So there will be microphones, so if you've got questions, questions are welcome. But I just felt that the sugar is going down a bit. And I have and the trick to wake you up is just to remind you that we have seen the cancer-related survival for all the patients, breast cancer patients, is going down, and the UK is not doing any better, but it's an international one, it's not our really local problem. I just want to remind you that despite medical oncologists and radiation oncologists are kind enough to share the responsibility, this is a surgical problem. So when we go around saying surgery is first treatment because we cure cancer patients, be aware that the drop of survival for all the patients is a surgical responsibility. So why do we do that bad? And it's us. It's thank you, oncologists, whatever, but it's our responsibility. So we do bad because we are not good in frailty assessment. And I'd like to perhaps hear a word from anyone who wants to talk on frailty assessment. Please, Sir Richard.
I am concerned about whether these statistics about Britain doing worse are actually true. I know that the paper had lots of august authors, but actually the more authors you have, the less any one author actually takes an interest in it. And I'm not sure that the observation that you get worse survival within a year of registration of a breast cancer, whether this is actually that some recurrent breast cancers are actually getting registered at the time of recurrence rather than when they originally happened. Also, we do have reliable follow-up as to who dies of breast cancer in this country, and the more reliable the follow-up is, then the greater your breast cancer death rate is going to be. And I think that particularly in old age, that this is a problem. So I think we should be looking at what can we do better in old age. But I don't think that we should be saying that necessarily we are doing worse than other countries. We don't need to say that. Let's look and see what we're doing and what we could do better. But I think this question about the international comparisons, I think, shouldn't be used as evidence that we are doing badly.
Well, let me get it right. I'm not comparing the UK against the rest of the world. It's not a football match. It's just the idea of UK and internationally are doing bad for older patients. Do we agree on that? Worse than younger patients?
No, I think there's lots more could be done for older patients. Things should be done. They should, you know, the treatments seem to work about as well in older patients as earlier on. If in colorectal cancer, when people do colorectal cancer trials, they get as many people over 70 as under 70. Why hasn't that happened in breast cancer? I mean, it's certainly, we're not doing enough in breast cancer patients over the age of 70. I'm just trying to take the international comparison out of that. It would be true in this country. I think it is true in other countries as well. I mean, it's too long an argument about the international comparisons. It's not relevant for the present purpose of this meeting. Yeah. What should be being done in older patients and isn't in this country and elsewhere?
Since we have the luxury of having patient advocates and representatives on the panel, it is my genuine perception that the poor results that we have on older patients is because older individuals tend to underestimate themselves. They ask, my mom asks, why do you need treating me if I get cancer? I'm old, I'm 85, I need to die. And as someone who was grown up with the intent of curing people despite their age, I think this is wrong. Is this an ethical issue? Do they not present at the right? Can I hear from patient advocates perhaps from Baroness Morgan as well?
I just think, could I jump in here? I think the question for me is, we want to stop women dying of breast cancer. It would be good if people could die comfortably of something a little less, awful. It's a terrible disease. So if your starting point there is we want to stop women dying of breast cancer and have those experiencing breast cancer living with a good quality of life long enough to perhaps die of something else, where can we make the most difference? And, you know, the messages coming very strongly to the all-party group on breast cancer were that there was a lot that could be done to improve the experience of women with breast cancer who are older, to improve access to information and support so that they could cope more reliably and effectively with comorbidities and complex other conditions and support needs. So whether that's because they have difficulty with mobility or difficulty with hearing or simply they have need more care at home. So there are lots and lots of complexities around the experience of breast cancer in old age, but also, and I'll throw this out there, we do live in a society perhaps where older women are not valued as much as younger women, where, people tend to make assumptions, and in this territory, what we really need is good evidence about what really works and what could improve the experience for women. So, you know a lot about what could be done better. And I think, as Sir Richard was saying, maybe we don't need to do it because the international comparisons are debatable. Maybe we need to do it because it's a real opportunity to improve the experience of patients in this country, and there's lots of opportunity there to bring to bring standards up and to learn new things about what might work and to save more lives.
Thank you.
Could I just ask Philippa a question along those lines? Do you see this as a clinical issue or do you see this as a political issue? Because obviously you wear both hats, Philippa, and what can the politicians and the political parties perhaps do to help us, or do you think it has to be politically driven to get this to succeed?
Yeah, well, I actually think the problem sits in both sides. We heard the comment about awareness, and I'm sure all of us who've worked at the clinic end will have met ladies who came along to a clinic because their daughter dragged them and said, but I thought I couldn't get breast cancer after 70. So simply the awareness that if you have a change in your breasts and you're 75, 80, whatever it is, you should go and see about it. That's something that is societal and politically can be, we can fund campaigns, we need to get that out there and simply get rid of that misconception. I think one of the most important things politically is funding this screening trial. Because obviously everyone in this room who's involved in screening, we're facing this, does screening do good or does it do harm? All the people who are being treated that maybe would never have had a problem. The older patients you're screening, obviously that actually increases. Because if you've got something that may never harm them in 20 years and they're already 80, we're going to have done more of that. And so to just extend it for political reasons or not extend it because of financial reasons would be wrong. So I think certainly one thing that I would try to take back is that the trial of age extension up the way needs to be done. We need to hold our nerve and we need to actually answer, will this bring more benefit to these women or more harm to them?
Okay, so we agree that awareness is very important. It's our priority. We want to convince the older lady that getting breast cancer is possible, is likely in their age group, and it's not a dead sentence. They can be treated or approached. Matti, how can we help physicians in tailoring the right treatment, i.e., does geriatric assessment help us? Do we have any evidence or not? How can we better frame the fit from the frail and offer them individualized treatment?
Ricardo, I think that we have to look at two situations. One is at the beginning of the whole treatment, and that's the question that has been put so nicely forward by Lodovico Balducci, a physician from Italian origin working in the United States, who many of us consider as the great-grandfather, if I may use the name, the word, of geriatric oncology. It is about whether the disease that we now are going to diagnose is actually going to be one that is going to lead to significant issues and maybe the death of the patient. And that's where we have to start distinguishing. And maybe for some patients, indeed, no surgery is the best way to go, because this patient is going to die within the next 2 years from something else, and we can control it with medical treatments. In the more advanced setting, we do not have sufficient evidence that assessing the prognosis of the patient, thanks to the instruments to assess the frailty of the patient, are really meaningful, in the sense that what we need to do is right now and then decrease the symptoms related to the disease with the most appropriate treatment. And whether the patient is frail or not, the patient might want to take a risk in spite of the frailty of receiving a treatment that might be dangerous.
Okay, I've got a question here.
John Robertson, the comment and question to Kieran, and also a comment from Richard. I mean, I think elderly breast cancer in many ways is the ultimate in personalised treatment. It's not just all the biological questions you have to answer, but it is this question of how well is the woman for treatment. And Kieran's noted that we are going to be collecting those questions about, you know, what their performance status is. But the other question in the room, and Matty's touched a little bit on it, is the competing causes of mortality. And I think that's one of the, you know, the very important questions. You know, how likely is this disease going to be to kill this person? And I think that's important, Kieran. I'd like to know if you're collecting that data, you know, because a lot of patients, for example, are put in endocrine therapy, and it may well be controlled, but if they die, do they get counted as dying from breast cancer or dying with breast cancer? And, you know, how are you going to collect that data? So that's my question to you. And the second question into Matty, I suppose, would be, you know, how do we judge what the value of those treatments are in terms of, you know, somebody's life expectancy at 71 versus 91? You know, can we afford those treatments? And finally, to Richard, maybe a question of prevention. Maybe we should be giving people, you know, tamoxifen at the age of 65 and preventing half the breast cancers, and these people will die of other things. So I think it's a bit personalised treatment here, and there's three different questions for each of you.
From the point of view of dying with or dying of, I think we have to go with what we have. And as you'll have seen from just the reaction to me putting up a comparison slide, this is obviously a very simple and straightforward business as regards getting the experts to agree on any given topic. And the correspondence in The Lancet after this article went in from many very experienced people was, as it always has been, as regards comparisons. So I think the point's been well made. Things need to improve. The UK is certainly not ahead of the game in this. And the data that we have, the cancer registration data, there is a lot of confidence in. Whether it tells you that that was actually the very cause of death or not, you'll know better than me, John, having trawled through it at different times. That's a variable feast. But that type of thing should not vary enormously across the country between all the different registries. There should be some degree of uniformity in that. And we are going to pragmatically run with the data that is being collected rather than try and introduce a lot of extra collection and different items to be collected, because it's almost impossible to do that.
I'd just like to answer, Ian, that after the lunch break, we'll have several speakers dealing with with the question you asked. What are we going to do deciding for in these different settings for the patients and looking at their life expectancy? So I will not give my opinion. I'd rather have them review the field after lunch break.
I'd just comment that whether or not tamoxifen or any other preventive measure is adopted, there's going to be a lot of people diagnosed as having breast cancer in old age, and we need to work out what to do better to help those that are diagnosed. I think these are separate questions. I just comment briefly, you said that the priority is to fund this trial. The trial is funded, and the curious thing is it's funded to continue for many years, because if it stopped without clear evidence, then there'd be pressure to screen in the age ranges where it's now randomising, so the total amount of money required would go up. So actually continuing the trial is cheaper than stopping the trial, so it will continue. But the very important question, the really important question that will really determine its value for women in the 2020s, 2030s, 2040s, is this trial in the older women, is it going to be just comparing screening in the 50s and 60s versus just one extra, that plus one extra screen, or is it going to be comparing screening your 50s and 60s versus screening your 50s, 60s and 70s? And your party parliamentary group was very clear in its recommendation that the interesting question is, you know, 2 decades of screening versus 3 decades of screening, and that, so it's the recommendation that those who are allocated extra screen after age 70 should continue to be screened through their 70s. That's the recommendation which needs to go to Public Health England, and it is a recommendation that they've shared.
Sorry, that's what I meant.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Because the question in the report was one extra round, 2 extra rounds, or 3 extra rounds. That's what I meant.
And
we need
be.
To do it properly,
yes.
Or we might as well not bother.
Okay, I've tried my best to control myself, but having the opportunity to put this question to Sir Richard, I really can't stop myself. Sir Richard, can you explain to me how comes after decades of patiently entered into observational database, religiously monitored, how comes you guys cannot tell me whether I need to excise the armpit of another patient or not? Do we not have a huge amount of data to answer simple questions that should be available on a population-based data set?
Look, I'd love to see 10,000 patients randomised or having been randomised 20 years ago on this. There is good evidence that local control matters. The radiotherapy trials did randomise big numbers. I think there's been about 40,000 women randomised into all of the trials of radiotherapy. And Carolyn Taylor will describe the evidence later on, first thing this afternoon. But essentially, yeah, local control does matter, and it matters in older women as well as in younger women. But we don't have large numbers randomised into trials of getting that better local control by surgical means. Radiotherapists have been better at randomising than the surgeons have.
Okay. I have a question from the audience here.
Alaa Rahman, consultant breast surgeon from UCL. Regarding the National Breast Cancer Audit, are we going to put the mental capacity assessment as a part of the ICONS? Because really it is the big problem with as a part of comorbidity, but we don't. Are we going to put the mental capacity assessment?
Only those items which are already in that COSD list, because again, it's back to what is being collected and what it's possible to collect, and what is agreed on, and will be consistent across the country. But we have one or two feasibility projects as part of the audit to see what would be perhaps the single best added-on item, and the clinical community would probably row with that and probably get behind a single item. It won't get behind many, though. So we're trying to be very careful about that.
Okay. I'm very pleased with the discussion. I would like to thank all the panelists and the audience as well, and we're spot on for dinner. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
All of that.